प्रजाया चले पुत्र
Upaschita,
that which is presently obtained,
that which is briefly obtained.
No Nivarcheta
Niradeva
Nista.
Nista.
Nivritta
Nivritta.
Devaki's death being stopped.
Devaki's death being stopped.
Puna
Puna.
Apatek
Apatek.
In the future it may happen again.
In the future it may happen again.
But what can I do?
But what can I do?
Translation. Vasudeva considered. By delivering all my sons to Kamsa, who is death personified, I shall save the life of Devaki. Perhaps Kamsa will die before my sons take birth. Or since he's already destined to die at the hands of my son, one of my sons may kill him. For the time being, let me promise to hand over my sons, so that Kamsa will give up this immediate threat. And if in due course of time Kamsa dies, I shall have nothing to fear. Purport. Vasudeva wanted to save the life of Devaki by promising to deliver his sons to Kamsa. In the future, he thought, Kamsa may die, or I may not beget any sons. Even if a son is born and I deliver him to Kamsa, Kamsa may die at his hands. For by providence, anything could happen. It is very difficult to understand how things are managed by providence. Thus Vasudeva decided that he would promise to deliver his sons to the hands of Kamsa in order to save Devaki from the imminent danger of death. Om Ganachimanandasya Ganajanashvataya Chakshuramalitamaya Tazmashi Gurudeva. You're getting a view of Vasudeva's thinking process, how he's reacting in this very disastrous situation. People today, they talk about crisis management by studying the behavior of Vasudeva in this circumstance. You can understand the perfection of crisis management and decision making at very intense moments. We all think that the obstacles and impediments that we have to go through in life are so unique and peculiar only. We ourselves know about them. No one knows the particular trouble I have to go through, the particular burdens I have to carry. This is the natural foolishness of a conditioned soul to think that Maya is so special for each individual. But you don't understand what I have to go through. You don't understand what happened to me. If you knew what happened to me, you'd understand why I'm acting in this way. In this way, people like to think that for every individual it's necessary to do a whole exhaustive study of their psychological background and all the things that happened in their childhood. Then you can make a proper recommendation about what should happen in their life. This is just false ego, thinking, my little world of Maya is so special and peculiar. No one can understand it without talking to me for years about what happened to me when I was a baby, what happened when I was a child. My Maya is so particular. That if you want to give me some Krishna Gaksha advice, you're going to have to do some real research, some real study of my whole family tree practically. You'll have to understand my mother, my grandmother, the country that my great grandparents came from before they came to New Zealand. You'll have to do a whole psychological, sociological, cultural study. Then you've got to understand my psychology, what I went through growing up. And then you can tell me to chant Hare Krishna and perform devotional service. But until you do that, don't try to impose any of the usual instructions of bhakti yoga on me. I mean, I know they're correct, but it's just you have to understand my particular situation. And the more that we devotees spend much time understanding each other's psychological backgrounds and crises, then there'll be real love and peace in the temple. Have you ever tried this? It works great, huh, doesn't it? You're really solving it. Not at all. The Lord says in the Bhagavad Gita that this material world is endlessly mutable. What is the Sanskrit? In any case, that means even if you try to understand Maya from an each individual case, you'll never get to the end. But actually, it's not necessary to try to understand each individual case of Maya, because there are basic principles going on in every situation. We can see that those who try to solve the individual and social problems of humanity by taking each situation as if it's a brand new situation, special in its own right, they never get to the end of it. That's what Krishna means by saying this material cosmos is endlessly mutable. It just, there's so many varieties, but all those varieties are of the same thing. So, Krishna gives you knowledge of what the same thing is, rather than having wasting your time trying to understand each specific occurrence of Maya. You'll go crazy trying to do that. It's like, for example, trying to cure the AIDS virus. The medical scientists have found out that AIDS is such a strange disease that every time they try to stop the particular viruses that are responsible for AIDS, the viruses, they mutate into another form. So soon try to stamp out the AIDS virus. It changes form, almost like it's consciously trying to resist you. So Maya is like that. That's why the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Moha Jala Samagrita. You become covered by a network of illusion. A net, you know, has so many little holes in it. It's very intricate for the fish anyway. Not for the fish anyway. So, we become caught up and covered by the network of illusion. We never get to the end of it. That's why Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita, Mudha Janmani Janmani. Birth after birth, you'll be a fool. It's bad enough to be a fool in one lifetime, but birth after birth, Mudha Janmani Janmani. This is the benediction you get by trying to understand material nature in each individual case. But if you take the fundamental principles of material nature as explained by the Lord, then you can begin to see what's going on. If you do it Krishna's way, you'll be able to get some vision. You'll be able to get darshan of what the actual problem is. Therefore, the Lord also says in Bhagavad Gita, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi Yukta Doshani Darshana. If you've got a brain, then you should be able to get darshan to see the dosha, the fault of material existence. And what is it? Birth, death, disease, and old age. We hear it so many times, but we don't really think about it. And why is that? Because of intense desires for sense gratification. These desires to dominate the resources of the Lord and to enjoy the resources of the Lord, these desires blunt our intelligence and we can't even see straight in terms of the basic things. You can test yourself in this way. We can notice how instead of feeling that any moment we may lose this body, at any moment this body may become sick and break down, instead, we're thinking, any moment there'll be an opportunity for sense gratification. Any moment my ship is coming in, there'll be something for my senses. You've got to catch yourself doing this. Just do a little self-study as you're walking about in your home, walking in the city. Just catch yourself how the contaminated mentality works. You're just like feeling, where's the opportunity for sense gratification? Any moment my senses could be satisfied. And of course, if you tell any so-called normal person of society this is how you're feeling, they'll compliment you. Oh, very good, very good. You've got a real zest for life. They even tell you, you've got a real lust for life. That's a compliment these days. You've got a real lust for life. You're always open. Yes. The sewers are also always open, but what goes in, that is not around. People may like to use that expression these days. You're open. They think that's really going to generate progress in your life, that you're open to the unexpected. This is some of the advice that's given to people. Be open to the unexpected. Cultivate your idiosyncrasies. And of course, be aware that there's no fixed truth. And there's no need of the teacher. Just consult the voice within. The super soul has nothing to do with inspiring us to, nothing to do with directing us or commanding us. Let's be specific. The super soul has nothing to do with commanding us to do sinful activity. The super soul does remind you of your past desires, but the super soul does not command you to do sinful activities. How do sinful activities result? This is an important point for understanding how you get troubled in material existence. The sinful activities result from contact with material nature. Because you are in touch with a polluting atmosphere, you must have problems. You must become compromised. You must become bewildered. There's no other way around it. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is doing you the great favor of pointing out what the problem is. You have an agitating material body, and you live in an agitated material atmosphere. And then you wonder why you have problems. Because you identify with an agitating form and agitating atmosphere. In fact, you think that that form and atmosphere are meant to give you fulfillment, meant to give you peace. These false expectations get you into trouble, birth after birth. Therefore, you do indeed become Buddha Jnani Jnani, birth after birth, a fool. It's a good line to meditate on. How does it feel to be a fool, birth after birth? Bad enough to be a fool in my lifetime, but birth after birth? But that is the process of material existence. Therefore, simply sitting around and discussing each other's personal problems and impediments from way back, that in itself is not the solution. The association of devotees is meant for enlightening one another to execute the processes of devotional service. Because regardless of what your past was, regardless of the load of karma that you're carrying, devotional service is the cure. So devotees associate with one another to inspire each other in bhakti yoga. We all know Kali Yuga is mad. We all know we've had so many crazy things happen to us. There's no mystery about that. But what we do need is mutual inspiration how to achieve the goal. Simply become fascinated with each other's mental and physical coverings will not solve. Won't solve anything. But when we are covered by the loose energy or getting a bit harassed by the loose energy, we think that there's a definite solution for me out there. There's a definite arrangement. And if I just get that arrangement from the material energy, then I'll be able to become Krishna conscious. It's out there, I know. It's waiting for me. Others have it. Everybody thinks the others have it. Look at that one. She's got everything she wants. She's really set up. Then you talk to her and she says, oh, I have so many problems here. This is not working, that's not working. It always looks like that from the other side. Look at him, look what he's got. If I had what he had, I would really be Krishna conscious. Everybody thinks like that. That devotee's got money. That devotee's got a nice husband or a nice wife. That devotee's got nice kids. But whenever you actually knew what goes on in each individual case, you understand that everybody is struggling how to avoid entanglement in Maya and how to remember Krishna. Never mind what your external circumstances are, or never mind what the components of your personal atmosphere or your personal world are. It all comes down to an individual choice. Do I want to be Krishna conscious or not? That individual choice is there no matter what your circumstances are. And unless you have that individual commitment to become Krishna conscious, changing circumstances will not protect you. This Kali Yuga is very turbulent, in case you haven't noticed. There are no material factors for stability. Family life is finished. People don't even know why they should have a society anymore, except for economic development. In this atmosphere of turbulence, even the social and familial arrangements, family arrangements of devotees sometimes become disturbed. Therefore, in any circumstance, our only solution is we have to take up the individual responsibility to be Krishna conscious. It's not that if I just get these circumstances, then presto, boom, I know I'll be really happy in Krishna consciousness. It's never like that. And as soon as you think it's like that, then you're already set up for problems. As soon as you think that the material energy has an arrangement for me that will just make everything all right, you're setting yourself up for big problems. What we should think is that I must become Krishna conscious. In the process of my becoming Krishna conscious, if there seem to develop some favorable arrangements for that, then I'll take it. But nothing will compensate for my lack of an individual drive to be Krishna conscious, and no circumstances will cover up for that lack. That's why Krishna tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, Tasma Yogi Bhava Arjuna. Arjuna, in all circumstances, be a yogi. Why? Because the circumstances are not under your control. Therefore, why not learn how to keep an even, keep your life together in any kind of circumstance? You can't control others. One moment you have the perfect wife, the next moment you got hell at home. One moment your kids are the envy of the devotional community. The next minute, they're a big embarrassment for you. This is what it's like in life. Good luck, bad luck, who knows? There's one story like that. One man and his son, they were walking, and they're walking long distance, and then someone happened to pass them with a horse and said, why don't you take the horse? It'll be better for your journey. So the father and son thought, oh, what good luck! Someone's giving us a horse. So then the father put the son on the horse, and the father kept walking. And then somehow the son fell off the horse. So the people gathered around and said, oh, what bad luck! He's broken his leg. Then, at the same time, there was a war going on. So the government recruiting agents came to the town to fetch all the young men to force them into the army. But this son now had a broken leg, so he couldn't go to the army. So everyone said, oh, what a good luck! This is the nature of the material world. Good luck, bad luck, who knows? And this is all that turbulence, and he's trying to become Krishna conscious. How do you know how it's going to turn out? You don't know what the end's going to be. But we like to make big plans. We've got it all worked out. Haven't you heard that expression? Life is what happens to you while you're busy making plans. We've got it all worked out how we're going to have our life arranged, how the world is going to treat us, how everyone else is going to treat us. We've got it all worked out. Sometimes we think that that creates a happy home life when at least one of the couple has it all figured out, how everything in the home should work and how how a partner should function. Then there's happiness. No surprises. And he or she acts completely according to vibrations. It's never like that. Vasudeva understands that. He knows that there's so many unpredictable factors in this situation. He's not saying, well, I'm the great Vasudeva, I know exactly what's going to happen. No. He's aware that he's got a lot going for him. As we heard yesterday, he remembers that at the time of his birth, the demigods were playing kettledrums. He knew he had something special about his health. And he also knew that, yes, one of my sons is supposed to kill Kamsa. But how it was all going to happen, he didn't know. And here he was, right in the midst of an extraordinary situation in which Kamsa was about to kill his own sister, the wife, the new wife of Vasudeva. So Vasudeva was desperately trying to save the situation. But his philosophy was not working upon Kamsa. So Vasudeva had to come up with a deal. He had to be clever. So we're getting some insight into his thinking process, how he's handling this very volatile, unpredictable situation. So Vasudeva's thinking, he's considering to himself, maybe I should offer to deliver all my sons to Kamsa. And then if Kamsa hears that offer, he may agree to spare Devaki, because Kamsa's not really afraid of Devaki, she's just a woman. He's afraid of Devaki's future children. Now, how do we know what the future will be? Says Vasudeva. Maybe I will indeed have a son who will kill Kamsa. That solves the whole problem. So even if I agree now to hand over all my sons, one of them may kill him. So, that happens, so be it. Or maybe we won't have any children at all. It's possible. During baby times, it was rare that couples could not conceive. Today it's quite common because of so much sinful activity by the man and woman. It's quite common they cannot conceive. But in baby times, highly unusual. Mm-hmm. Generally, in baby times, the only problem that might be there is that the father cannot get a son. But children, they were always happening. So, Vasudeva is calculating like this. Someone that comes is going to die. I don't know how it's going to happen. I've got to figure out how to save my wife now. He's displaying extraordinary cool-headedness amidst the greatest disaster. Could you think like this on your wedding day? You know, the fire sacrifice is ended in the temple. You're on your way to your new home in is it Murray? Is it Murraydale? Yeah, you got your new house rented in Murraydale, you know. And you're on your way home, and all of a sudden, some hoodlums attack, and they want to kill your wife. How would you be able to react? Vasudeva is so sober and transcendental, he's able to go from a joyous situation to a horrible situation and keep an even keel in both. The waves are very joyous. Yet, the next minute there was complete disaster, but Vasudeva was equipoised in both. That is a devotee. In all circumstances, a devotee is thinking, how to make a profit for Krishna? Prabhupada explained that a good businessman knows how to make a profit whether the price of rice is going up or down. If you can't make a profit in a bad market, you're not a businessman. This is the proper saying. A good businessman, whether prices are high or low, he knows how to make money. Similarly, Prabhupada pointed out, the devotee in any circumstance knows how to depend on Krishna. It's not that you demand that you have to have certain circumstances, otherwise you can't be Krishna conscious. And Krishna, you got to understand, you didn't give me those circumstances, so don't bug me when I do what I want to do. You had your chance. You could have given me this. You could have given me that. He has this. She has that. I don't. So just, I won't say the bug off, but just chill out or something. This is our attitude. We come into this world with nothing, we leave with nothing. So, sooner or later, we have to get accustomed to the fact that we have an individual responsibility to become Krishna conscious, and we have to use our intelligence how to do that. Vasudeva is using his intelligence. The whole process of Krishna consciousness is meant to strengthen our intelligence so our intelligence can be a friend, be an aid in extricating us from material existence. We have to learn how to analyze sharply, to consider what are the important ingredients of every situation, and then use it for Krishna's pleasure. We all want to survive. But what is the Vedic understanding of survival? It's quite different from the Western concoction. What we consider survival is that our body lasts. That's, we consider that a great accomplishment. Just like now, statistics have just been released, which show that all over the world, the average lifespan has risen to 80 years. It's going higher even in the not-so-developed countries. So the average person thinks, this is great news, it shows we're doing something right. The lifespan is up to 80 years, the average lifespan. Of course, we know that is actually not correct. If you take into account all the babies that are being killed in the womb, then that average, that mathematical average, comes down. Furthermore, the Vedic vision is to take a look at the quality of the life. So what if actually you have indeed increased the lifespan to 80 years? What is the quality of those years you're living? And actually, it's not simply abortions that bring that average down. Every 40, 50 years is a huge world war or something. Millions of people die, but they don't count that. It's less, something different. We're going to base our calculations of lifespan on normal circumstances. Normal circumstances in this world means huge wars every once in a while. And people, they like to see war as long as they're not involved. They like to see it. Especially if wars bring about economic growth, then it's all right. That's another reason why the Dvainik society likes to get everybody absorbed in sports, especially violent sports, rugby, American football, like that. It prepares people for war. Our side is going to kick that other side. Our boys are the strongest. It's the same thing. So the Dvainik controllers of society, they know. They keep the people juiced up on sports, and that keeps them out of our ear, it keeps them pacified, and also, if necessary, has them ready for war. Our side's gonna win. So what actually is survival? From the Vedic point of view, Shukadeva Goswami explains that in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Kim Pramatasya Bhagavati Paroshaya Vairanaya Vilam Vilam Muhurtam Vidhitam, Gatateya Shriya Sehi. What is the value of a long life wasted by years of inexperience in this world?
Shivade Goswami just said it right away.
What's the value of living a long life? We don't care so much for that. If that life is just wasted by stupidity, it's better to have a short life if you have a full moment, if you have a few moments of full Krishna consciousness. That's the important thing, not the length of the lifespan. Of course, we know that during Vedic times, actually, the lifespans were much longer. But still, the sages were saying, what's the big deal about a long lifespan? Better to live a short time than you have a few moments of Krishna consciousness. A few days ago, we were discussing the prayer from the Mukunda Mala Stotra. Krishna Tvadiya Parapankaja Panjananta Ajaya Vishajana Ajaya Vishajana Rajasa Vana Hamsa. Krishna, let me die immediately while I'm healthy. How can materialists understand these devotional ecstasies? Krishna, I pray, let me die now while I'm healthy. I'm going to die when I'm healthy. If I'm going to die, let me die after I've been sick. But while I'm healthy, let me enjoy the senses. No, that prayer says, Krishna, let me die immediately while I'm healthy, because then I know my mind will be peaceful and I can easily think of you at the time of death. But if you wait till I'm real old and decrepit, my mind will be so disturbed, I might forget you at the time of death. So we have an opposite standard, and it takes a while to become acclimated to this different standard. That is why regular hearing and chanting in the association of devotees is very important. You get acclimated to the different standard. Long life doesn't matter. Actually, though, the fact is, if you live according to Vedic principles, that's the best. That's the best way to have a long lifespan. Because sinful activity disrupts and disturbs the lifespan. So, we consider survival something different than just hanging on until you're 80. Survival means to stop death. That is the point we found out a few days ago. Because death is a punishment imposed in the condemned life of material existence, the Vedic culture is based on avoiding death. Chapta Dehavana Janma 90. Everyone should try to avoid death and rebirth by cultivating spiritual life, and should not submit to death without struggling to survive. So Krishna consciousness means struggling to survive. We are actually trying to stop death. We're not just going to give up this body without a fight. But what does it mean to fight? Does it mean to just to consult the doctor and go through all sorts of treatments, chemotherapy, this therapy, that therapy? I don't want to die. No, those things, if they work at all, just put off the inevitable. People are so crazy that fill me with tubes and put me on artificial respirators, but I don't want to give up this body. We don't call that survival. We call survival actions in bhakti yoga to stop death. Not put it off for a few days. Real survival means you don't take another body. So, in the Western world, they have this expression coming from Darwinism, survival of the fittest. But who's surviving? That means no one's fit. You see the people out jogging Sunday morning. They're hoping my body will remain strong and healthy for a long time so I can enjoy sense gratification. That's not survival. Survival means that you stop the process of repeated birth and death completely. Now, where are you going to get that kind of education? So you should go to your school, to your university, go to your parents, go to your employer, and say, can you give me knowledge how to stop death completely? They'll think you're crazy. Only at a Krishna conscious institution can you get that kind of knowledge. Yes, there are other religions, but those religions contain no information about the self. Christianity has very nice devotional platitudes and some basic morality, but there's no information in Judeo-Christianity what is the self. That's the problem. No knowledge. Therefore, people are always caught up in wanting to be moral, maybe some of them think like that, and then always not being able to, so then they get guilt, and then the psychologists come along and say, what are you feeling guilty for? Just forget it all, just do what you like. And many people just say, yeah, I'm tired of this guilt. Let's just get on with this show. Let's gratify our senses. Which is what we were doing anyway when we were being so-called religious. They say like that because they have no knowledge. What is the self? The scientists can't give them any knowledge. If it's not a scientist, they'll admit we don't know what the self is. Most of them are dishonest. They'll say, you're just matter pushed around by chance. If there's going to be survival, there must be education how to stop death. This is our occupation. How to love Krishna and how to stop death. What better job can you want? Your career. To know Krishna, to understand Krishna, to love Krishna and to stop death. This is the greatest career. It's the most fulfilling career. So we have to be a bit clever, just like Vasudeva. We've got to analyze our life. With your intelligence, you've got to go through all the features of your life, all the people that are part of your life, all the things that are part of your life, and see how they're contributing to the goal to stop death. Figure how much time you have left in your life if you live a full lifespan. Let's say you're 25. Then you should think, according to normal calculation, I've lived about a third of my life. Now, what are the next two-thirds of my life going to be like? Especially when the last third is old age. So really, I've got the central portion of my life from 25 to 50. Well, how am I going to do? How am I going to arrange that so I can go back to Godhead? What are the favorable things I can do and what are the unfavorable things I can avoid? You've got to plan your life like you're not going to be around forever, because you're not. Especially material desires, they pound so heavily you think that it's going to be like that forever. But the body is going to drop. So you spend your years trying to satisfy your material desires, but that body is going to be finished anyway. What's the point? Have you ever been around old people who've spent their life pursuing material desires? Now they're in their late 60s, 70s. They're completely embarrassed. Right?
Yeah.
We worked so hard trying to satisfy these inflamed desires. Now the desires have gone, for the most part. Our body is incapable of trying to pursue all those desires. But what's left? Complete emptiness. They're so embarrassed about it, they don't like to talk. They don't like to talk about it. Generally, old people keep amongst themselves. The husband and wife are still living and are still together. They just have their own little world. They don't like to talk to others. Because that's the secret. They're not telling. It's not that they call their grandchildren and say, hey, I want to tell you something. It wasn't worth it. Do you know any grandparents who do that? Unless they're Krishna conscious? Hey, you know, let me tell you something. When I was 25, I just acted like my material desires, you know, were going to be with, they were just my eternal companion. I had to do something about it, otherwise the world was going to come to an end. I worked hard. I struggled with the family.
I struggled with being alone with your mother for 50 years. And now I'm 70, and what's the point of it all? There's no point. What can I do now? My body's too broken down to give me any pleasure. I've got no higher knowledge. I don't know where I'm going after death. What's the use of this? This is crazy. Don't do it like me. Don't do what I did. How many grandparents say like that? No. They just keep quiet. Basically, it's envy. I suffer, so you're going to suffer. I'm not revealing insights into real insights into life. You're going to have to go through the same thing. That's what it's envy. Or when they're not keeping amongst themselves, they like to be around their grandchildren, especially their grandchildren of 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Because it makes you think that you're still in touch with youth, even though you're 75 and have a completely decrepit body. When you're around, your 4-year-old grandson, then you kind of feel like it's a vicarious thing. Every time he runs and jumps, you think you're running and jumping too.